Leviticus chapter 20, we'll read through that chapter and then talk about some things concerning that Leviticus 20. We did 19, which was a lengthy chapter, but we kind of just stopped there. We didn't cover the 20th chapter, so let's go ahead and do that tonight. Leviticus 20, verse number 1. And Yehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, "Say to the children of Israel, any man of the children of Israel or of the stranger who sojourns in Israel, who gives any of his offspring to Moloch, shall certainly be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones." So we're going to see in the first few verses here, we're going to see the price that God gives for a capital offense. Capital offense meaning somebody, the price is death. And we'll see how Yehovah is warning the children of Israel. Now, this is many years before they're ever going to go into the land. He's telling them how to conduct themselves because he knows that even though they're not there where they're actually performing these rituals right now, they're going to go there. And those people are established. And they're going to be mixed in between them. And he's telling them, he said, "I want you to be careful that you don't go in that land and do what they do." And so he's telling the punishment for this offense is death. Verse 3, And I shall set my face against that man, and shall cut him off from the midst of his people, because he has given of his offspring to Molech, so as to defile my set-apart place and to profane my set-apart name. Verse 4, And if the people of the land at all hide their eyes from the man as he gives any of his offspring to Molech, and they do not kill him, then I shall set my face against that man and against his clan, and I shall cut him off, and all who go whoring after him, even go whoring after Molech from the midst of their people. Verse 6, And the being who turns to mediums and spiritists to go whoring after them, I shall set my face against that being and cut him off from the midst of his people. And you shall set your face apart and shall be set apart, for I am Yehovah your Elohim. And you shall guard my laws and do them. I am Yehovah who sets you apart. For everyone who curses his father or his mother shall certainly be put to death. Notice that. Everyone who curses his father or his mother shall certainly be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is on him. Very interesting terms there. Now we're going to get into verse 10. I tell you what, why don't we cover the first 9 verses first before we go any further. We'll cover these first 9 verses, look at them in their setting and what's actually happening here. So what we see is this term, the first few verses, he's focused on this term Molech. And Molech was a god, a pagan rite of worship that the people would worship because they believe if they sacrificed to Molech, it would bring prosperity to their field, their crops, the rain would come. And so it got to, as they were making sacrifices, they started out making sacrifices of material things. They'd bring whatever their produce was and they'd sacrifice it. But there was nothing happening. Or they'd bring animals, nothing was happening. And so it got to the point they started bringing their own children. They figured if we sacrifice our children, because it's the highest sacrifice you can give. And so they were sacrificing their children to Molech, and Jehovah's warning them. Now, this is going to be years before that's ever going to be in their face. Now, they know about pagan worship of false deities because he took them from Mitzrayim, which was heavily steeped in that. But they're going to Canaan, which is heavily steeped in Molech worship. Now, Molech was this deity that they would build this huge statue. It looked like a bull, big horn sticking out. And this bull is sitting in a sitting position with hands like this. And in the hands was a basin. And under the basin was a cauldron of fire. And so what they would do, they would light this fire and they would toss their children into the basin. And that was this, and they believed that somehow would release the prosperity for them throughout the year. This was a common practice. And Jehovah was telling the children of Israel, when you go into the land, I don't want you to get involved in that. Because if you do, this is the penalty for that involvement. Now, we already went over some of this in previous chapters when he's telling them the things that sets you apart. This sets you apart. So now he's given, basically, chapter 20 is explaining what's the penalty for you actually breaking that, going into that offense. The penalty, what we've seen so far, is death, or the one just underneath, immediate, this is immediate death. Drag out, you're dead. The next one underneath that is cut you off from your people. That's not as severe, but that's a eternal bond, ban. Eternal ban. And so they're completely cut off from the people, and it could actually carry with it the death penalty. Many people died when they were cut off because they had no place to go. And so they succumbed to the elements, they succumbed to nobody helping them. And so being cut off also carried with it a grave, grave offense when it came to what they were doing, when it came to God saying, this is what happens to you when you offer to Molech and you do these things. So I wanted to just point out that to you. In his first nine verses, and he uses this term in verse 2 to say to the children of Israel, any man of the children of Israel. He emphasizes this twice in these very few verses. He speaks to the man because it is the man's responsibility that he don't take a back seat to anybody, including his wife, to allow this to come and be in his home. We're not going to participate in this. He says to any man of the children of Israel, or not only the Hebrews he's speaking to here, any stranger who sojourns in Israel. So this is for the ones who weren't native born, just like those who left Mitzrayim and they decided to leave Mitzrayim and join Israel. This went for all of those people. There was no distinction. So a lot of times people read these rules and regulations and say, well, that was just for the Israelites. But he says, not just for the Israelites, but it's for those who sojourn among Israel. They can't do these type of practices. He says, any of the stranger who sojourns in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Molech. Why was this such a grave offense? Because the offspring was important to God. Why? Why was offspring important to God? It's life. It's simple as that. It's life. God is not about killing. He's about life. Even God's concerned about all life. That's why it was such. God was so tired of all the animals that had to be killed in order to get people in right standings again, so they'd go from an unclean state back to a ritual state of purity. Because it was life being taken, and God didn't want that, but that was the only way he could have it done until the Messiah would come and ultimately give his life and pay the price in full for all of us. And so I want you to always remember when you read these things, take in consideration, God is about life. He can't stand us taking something that's so serious to him that it don't really matter. in any society, in any generation. You say, well, that was back then for those people. What about for us today? What's the rules today? What's the rules about life today? Does it not matter today? Are we not talking about still human beings? Are we not talking about the same Yehovah, the creator God who made everything, who gave everything to us? Are we not talking about his set apartness? His glory, his esteem? It's the same. But we live in different times, in different generations. We think, well, it's not so bad today because it's just what it is. It never is that with God. Why? Because he's all about life. He don't want anyone to die. Yet, the only way to fix the problem is to eliminate the participants who continually disobey and go against God. And so this death is not God arbitrarily killing anyone, but it's him stepping out of the way and letting judgment come. And judgment comes. In this case, judgment came by stoning. And one thing about stoning takes a lot of people. Stoning is a community effort. It wasn't one man picked the stone up and threw it and killed somebody. It took multiple stones to throw, and lots of them. And it was once it got started, you couldn't stop in the middle of it. So he wants to know that all Israel had to be on board with the process of judgment that God was handing out to the children of Israel concerning what, when they came into this land, do not make sacrifice to Molech. Don't get involved in that. And so, again, any man of the children of Israel or of the stranger who sojourns in Israel who gives any of his offsprings to Molech shall certainly be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. In verse 3, and I shall set my face against that man and shall cut him off from the midst of his people because he has given his offspring to Molech. So we see the term cut him off is also linked to stoning. So it could mean the capital punishment of death. It also could mean being cut off from the people, being ostracized, being in a permanent ban. And so I wanted to point that out. It carries a broader definition to be cut off than just saying stone them. There's not much of a broad definition there. You just get stoned, you're dead. But cut off could potentially be stoning at some point, or it could be cut off to the point where you and all your family, your kindred, everybody is cut off from the people, and your seed no longer exists to procreate. It also means that. No existence of the seed to procreate. Cutting off could be a serious deal that also affects generations. It could affect generations down the road. That's why it's so important that we're careful what we do in our time, that we don't pass on a generational curse, because it can definitely continue to go on. And so he says, this is what he says it does when you, because he has given his offspring to Molech, so as to defile my set apart place and to profane my set apart name. When we don't take into consideration what God says in his own word as given a description of what it takes to have set apartness in your life, what's the code? We don't take it into consideration. When we look at verse chapter 19 and we say, well, it's just a bunch of codes and rules and regulations that don't apply to us today, then we see that we're really defiling his set apart place and we're profaning the set apart name. You say, well, how important it is to follow this? Well, just look at the world today. We live in a world today, every one of us, we're living in a world society that doesn't follow this code at all, and that's why we're in the shape we're in. That's the reason things are going the way they're going. And if the people of the land at all hide their eyes from the man as he gives any of his offspring to Molech, and they do not kill him, then I shall set my face against that man and against his clan. So you don't commit the offense, but you say nothing about the offense. God says you're complicit. I'm not saying that. That's what he's saying. He said, if you don't do what this capital punishment that I'm handing down needs to be done, and you say nothing, then you're complicit, and then he's going to set his face against the man that acts that way. To say nothing is being complicit, and God says we should say something. We have to stand up against what's wrong. Then I shall set my face against that man and against his clan, and I shall cut him off. And all who will go whoring after him, even go whoring after Molech from the midst of their people. Because eventually, the more you don't, when you don't stand up and speak truth, when you see the wrong being done, and it's constant wrong, you say, well, I'm not going to comment on it. I don't have an opinion on it. Well, our opinion is not personal opinion. We ought to give God's opinion on it. When God says, it's just like, you know, Molech today would be no different than our modern day abortion laws. And to say that abortion, I'm not going to say anything about it. I don't have an opinion on abortion. Well, that's an opinion, according to God. You have to have, what's God's opinion on it? What do you think God's opinion is on it? He's telling us what his opinion is. Don't give your offspring to Molech. And so if God gives his opinion, our opinion ought to be what his opinion is. We shouldn't do that because God says it's wrong, you should say it's wrong. If God stands against it, you should stand against it. Well, there's nothing you can do about it. People's just going to do what they want to do. There is something you can do about it. There is something. You can actually do something about it. You can speak against it. You say, well, what is that going to matter? It may not matter to a lot of people, but it matters to God. But to say nothing is being complicit, meaning I'm not going to chime in. I'm not going to say anything about it because there's so much varying opinions about what happens. Just like when the Dobbs judgment came down just a few months ago from the Supreme Court. It literally made people go crazy. Because you finally see how much people want to be involved in killing of children. That we've killed millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of children already. Like it's nothing. Like it doesn't even matter. That's the modern day giving your children over to Molech. Now, I'm not saying that's the only thing, but that's the big thing that everybody, it's a big deal when it comes especially to in the political arena. Every time we have a political race coming up, this thing comes to the forefront and you got to be asked your opinion on the abortion rights, what you think should be done. And so they're going to ask all the ones who's running, what's your opinion on abortion? And everybody's going to give their opinion. What's your opinion on it should be God's opinion. Whatever God says, that should be your opinion. We shouldn't have our own opinion. We didn't create life. And we don't want to be complicit in saying nothing or saying something that we shouldn't say. We just want to give whatever God says. His opinion is, that's what our opinion is. And this is what he's trying to teach the children of Israel. You're going to go into a land that you hadn't been in yet, and it's going to be dominated by this pagan system. You cannot offer your children to Molech. I don't care what everybody else is doing, you don't do it. And he's telling them, if you do it, you're going to find yourself in trouble. And if you know somebody that's doing it, and you say nothing about them doing it, I hold it against you also for being complicit with this wrongdoing. Even though you didn't offer it, that is the compromise, all you need. It won't be long, you will be offering it. It won't be long. And now, the second thing that I want to talk about this Molech is we offer our children to Molech when we're not involved in our life to the fullest, and we just let, like the school systems. The school systems now have really gone off the chain. They really have when it comes to this woke teaching. Well, now they're going to have, they're pushing hard to make this curriculum to teach your children that you don't have any rights anymore as parents. Your rights are forfeited, and they can up to 4 or 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, they can decide whether or not they want to be a boy or a girl, and then they can actually have gender reversal procedures lined up from at a young age, and this is going to be a curriculum taught in schools. Can you imagine that? Don't offer your children to Molech. Because Molech can care less about him. He can care less. And that's where we at as a society. It's a shame. You never ever dreamed that would be something you would have a discussion about. It was a time you'd wake up and you'd let your kids go to school and you kind of felt safe about it. And now it's not so safe anymore. And right now as we're having this meeting, there's parents who are standing up against it and saying, we're going to do something, and they're being arrested by the FBI. I'm not talking about soft arrest. I'm talking about hard arrest. Tackled to the ground, feet tied, hands tied, and drug out of school board meetings. That's the stuff that's happening in the world that we live in. Because once this thing starts, it never gets enough. So Molech, those who were in charge of this whole Molech procedure, they'd build these finest golden calves, and it was beautiful. And they were constantly pushing the people, you got to give more, you got to give more. Archaeologists have found in some of these sites where they was doing this, they was having this Molech worship, they found entire buildings, these big buildings that they would find, just the foundations left to them. And they started digging in the foundation, and it would be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of baby bones in these slabs. They figured because if you build with the bones, it brought prosperity to the building, and the building would stand forever. But these foundations are being excavated with hundreds of thousands of baby bones that's made into the foundations of it. That's the kind of stuff that was going on, and it's still going on today. It's taking on a different type of way because it could be, there's no, you know, if you've seen somebody throwing their baby in the fire, that would upset you pretty bad, wouldn't it? But while we're saying this, to the tunes of hundreds a day, babies are being killed in abortion. It's not as upsetting because we're not there, we're not involved, you see? So we don't comment on it. There's no comment. But what we have to do is, you know how many professed believers will vote somebody in the office who's a staunch believer in sacrificing the babies? So we have to make some sound decisions. We really do. We have to pray and say, God, what do I need to do here? Because you don't want to be involved in that type of stuff. We have it happening all around us. Then I shall set my face against that man and against his clan, and he shall cut him off, and all who go whoring after him, even go whoring after Molech from the midst of their people. And the being who turns to mediums, and he shifts a little bit here, to mediums, this is a serious offense here, turns to mediums and spiritists, and go whoring after them, I shall set my face against that being and cut him off from the midst of his people. And so what we see here, he talked about this in chapter 19. Now he's telling you, what's the offense? It's a little lesser offense, but nonetheless, it can carry the same weight with it. Potentially, death comes to the person who turns to spiritists or mediums. And because why would you seek advice from a spiritist or a medium when you can get advice from Jehovah? And so we see that Saul, because God was their king. Initially, God was their king. Then they said, we want a king. We want a king. We need a king. We need a king. And so they were, in essence, rejecting God for being their king. They said, we need a king, somebody that's tangible, somebody we can relate to, somebody we can look in the eyes. And so Saul was stood head and shoulders above everyone. He was selected to be king. And Saul was leading the people. At the beginning of it, it was all going smooth, and all of a sudden, Saul's popularity, the kingdom kind of got to his head. And the prophet was telling him different things he needed to do, and he didn't want to hear the prophet. And when the prophet dies, you know, Saul thinks, well, I'm going to do it all myself. Well, that was a mistake, because what he did, he sought the instructions from the witch of Endor. And he knew better. We're talking about Saul, who was well-versed in the reading of the Torah. Not only that, he had to write in his own hand the entire book of Deuteronomy. This was not something that tricked him, and he didn't know. He knew, but he started to compromise. And when he sought the witch of Endor, he got a reply, and he thought it was God. Well, how did he get a reply from a dead man? It had to be God. A dead man spoke to him. Samuel spoke to me. He let me know what I was doing was correct. What it was demons who took on the voice and the embodiment of Samuel and tricked Saul into believing something that was not correct. And because of it, he winds up in serious trouble. And ultimately, Saul lost his life, never repenting, never coming to grips with the reality, what God was doing and what God done. While Samuel was still king, he raised up David. And because he raised up David to be king, God rejected Saul. What did he do? He cut him off from the people. He cut him off. And once God cut him off, it didn't matter how much powerful Saul was, didn't matter how big his army was, it didn't matter. Many times David could have killed Saul, but he wouldn't touch him until God got rid of him himself. God cut him off. It wasn't David's fight. It wasn't David's war. All David was supposed to do was listen to Jehovah, and that's what he did. Many times David could have killed Saul because he won the hearts of the people. Saul was king, but David won the hearts of the people. And because of it, he stayed true to what God's call was and let God cut him off. And when God cut him off, that's what exactly happened. And eventually Saul lost his life and his sons lost their life. There was nobody heir to the throne. It was clean slate, and David walked right in because he was anointed. He told Samuel, he said, how long are you going to mourn for Saul, seeing I've rejected him? Fill your horn with oil and go down to Jesse's house and anoint somebody to be king there. And so we see that God's hand was upon. So he's telling us, do not turn to mediums. Why would you turn to mediums? And the word turn is very important there. Don't turn, meaning you were going in the direction of Jehovah. And in order to go in the direction of mediums and spiritists, you had to turn. You turn from God. That's a terrible thing to do. And many people do that. They turn back to old life, turn back to the way it was. You always want to turn back. What is not satisfying to keep you pushing forward? Most of the time, there's a couple things that cause that. One, we don't want to keep changing. And change is very difficult sometimes, but we need to, there's sometimes we just got to tidy up a little bit. And when we tidy up, we can keep going forward. But it's in those moments that people sort of turn. And they go back to the old ways. And he said, don't do that. Don't turn to mediums and spiritists. Why would you seek advice from someone of such superior, has so much less power than Jehovah? Jehovah's power is so much more superior than their power. And he said, don't turn to mediums or spiritists. Don't go whoring after them. And this is what happens. You have these, years ago they'd have these talk shows. There was a talk show, I remember years ago, the guy's name was Donahue. Remember that talk show? Donahue was famous for having these spiritists come on his show, and they'd talk to your dead relatives for you. You'd be sitting in the audience, and he'd look at you and say, who's Uncle Joe? And the person would start crying, oh, I never told him anything. How do you know my uncle's name was Joe? He just told me to tell you. And so it draws, sucks people in, man, before you know it. And then you got Christian believers. They want this. They want it. They want somebody to tell me something I didn't know. And so what happens is we start kind of acting that way in church. And we start telling people, read their mail in church. And we're going to tell them this and this and that. Well, how does that turn out? One guy would say, well, you know, if somebody tells me this, I'll serve God the rest of my life. And they're not serving God today. Because it's all a smokescreen. It's all it is. The only way you're going to stay planted is you got to have your feet in some firm foundation. And the foundation that God laid was the Word. That's what He laid as firm foundation. We have to stand on the Word of God. Everything else is going to fade away. Everything is going to pass away. But the Word will not pass away. That's what He said. It'll stand. And that's what He laid for the foundation. So we don't have to seek spiritists and mediums. We don't have to do that. We don't have to have somebody kind of tell us secret things and all this. We got the Word of God. It's establishing us. And that's what He wants us to understand, that we grab hold to this. And you shall set yourself apart and shall be set apart, for I'm Yehovah Elohim. So He's just emphasizing everything He said in chapter 19. Set yourself apart. You shall set yourself apart and shall be set apart, for I am Yehovah Elohim. Verse 8, and you shall guard my laws and do them. I am Yehovah who sets you apart. How do you keep it smooth? How do you keep refreshing yourself? You shall guard my laws and do them. I am Yehovah who sets you apart. When you guard His laws, can you imagine a society who would guard the laws of Yehovah? How much different that would be. But when we don't have any difference in the church than we do in the world, that's an issue. I mean, if you took some time to go look at some of the productions that were put on this past Easter throughout the United States in churches, go look at the productions that were put on. You wouldn't even believe some of the things. You would not believe it. I mean, you couldn't tell if you was at a concert, a worldly concert, or if you was in church. You couldn't tell if this was some seance or you was in church. That's how much has been brought into the church. They spent millions of dollars to put on these productions. Why is that? Why do you think people are doing that? Because they know that's how Hollywood does it. It's easy to get people convinced to come. It's entertainment. We're here to entertain you, and this is when time the show starts. Just make sure you bring your pocketbook when you come. But we're here to entertain you. We're here to have you have a good time. We don't want you to forget what we're about to put on. You take some time and go look at some of the productions that happened this year for this Easter time, you would be your mind blowed, and it's so connected to what this is talking about. A society that don't keep the laws of Yehovah will soon and quickly go right back to the way it was. For everyone who curses his father and his mother shall certainly be put to death. That's a pretty strong statement for cursing father and mother. But we don't understand what is he saying here. When you don't give, the best way I can explain it is, God's glory or His esteem is the word kabod. The word kabod is the weight. It's weighty. It's a weighty thing. How much weight do you give God? How much respect? What's the level of respect that you give Him? Does His words matter when He speaks? And if you take a society that don't give God much weight, that society is quickly failing. You take a community that don't give God the weight that He deserves, that community is quickly failing. I don't care what city, I don't care what state, I don't care what country, I don't care what operation, those who don't give God the weight He deserves will quickly fail. Now, it may seem like on the outside, everything's fine and dandy. But you can't have a society that God won't come and judge who's participated in not giving Him the weight that He deserves. Same thing that when we talk about when a person discredits mom and dad to the point they give them no weight. In other words, it don't matter what they say anymore. I'm going to do what I want to do. He said that person should be put to death. Pretty strong, ain't it? Can you imagine we raised a group of kids with this understanding? We'd have a different generation. Because they would see how serious it is. Because kids get a certain age, they say, I don't care what my mom and daddy says, I'm going to do what I want. But if they were taught from a youngster these verses, they were taught these things, they would quickly think about saying that statement. But when we don't teach them that, this stuff just flies off them out of anger, they'll say it sometimes. You say, well, they don't mean it. They may not mean it, but they're saying it. Saying it's the beginning of starting to act it out. It's just the beginning. Once it comes out of you, it doesn't take long before you start acting upon what you said. You release it. Once it's released, it's hard to get it back in. For everyone who curses his father or his mother shall certainly be put to death. Capital punishment for this offense is death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is on him. It's his fault. Once you do that, it's your fault. So we have to make sure that we don't lose. It don't matter how old you get. It don't matter how smart you are. You always got to give weight to your parents. Why is that? Why do you think God is so adamant? Why did he connect, in chapter 19, he connected the same sort of statement with the Shabbat? Because he wants us to give weight to what he does, what he decides. What was Shabbat? God's decision. That wasn't your decision, wasn't my decision. It was his decision. He could have made holy the first day, but he didn't. He could have made holy the fourth day, but he didn't. He made holy the seventh day. Why? His decision. And when you don't give him weight for his decision by going and trying to change what he decided, that's not giving him a whole lot of weight. And he's linking that same thing, and we see this in repeating itself in verse 9 of chapter 20. A person who curses father and mother, meaning they give it, it's a total disregard no matter what they say, I'm not listening to you no more, I don't want to hear it, that person should be put to death, God said. Now you notice that there's a problem with our hearing, even with me saying this. It's hard to hear this stuff because we live in a society that is more tolerable. We want to tolerate. And we're a society that we claim this. I think it's false, but we claim it. And sometimes we staunchly claim it and proud to claim it, that we're being more sensitive to people's needs and their feelings. And we don't want to hurt nobody. We don't want to see anybody die. You'll have people who, out of one side of their mouth, they'll stand up and support abortion 100% of their life. They'll go crazy about killing babies. There's nothing wrong with it. But if a person murders somebody, they say, we shouldn't kill that person. How dare we kill that person? They're very sensitive about that. Why would we kill this person? We should let him live. We should feed him, and we should re-educate him. And we put him in prison for a while and put him on death row and then let him back in society. Then he'll kill again, and then we'll do the same thing again. Why is that? Why do you think that is? Because we have something that's false when it comes to being sensitive to people who are blatantly doing these things, yet when it's being done right in front of us, at a different level, we have no sensitivity whatsoever. To the point that abortion, they believe this. There's laws right now that's pushing hard for these laws, especially as Dobbs come out. They're fighting, and now they're going all out. They played all their cards. But the Supreme Court, we have these justices that were put on the Supreme Court, and so their vote's not there, but they played their whole hand. I don't know if you listen to this stuff, but they played their whole hand. They believe that abortion could be done after the child's born, up to 30 days, you can still go in and kill the baby. It's under abortion law. Can you imagine that? And it's between the woman and her doctor. It's none of our business. And the child has no rights until the mom says it has rights or that it's actually living. Now, it's living for 30 days in a hospital. She can decide, I don't fit. I can't make it work. And so she can decide, and it's still considered not murder. It's a right. It's a right. It's a choice. Can you imagine that? Now, we already abort up to the 9th month anyway, while still in the womb, because they never consider a baby being born actually is alive until it breathes its own air. Yet it has a heart rate and all this stuff. And, a lot of times we don't like having this discussion because it's just really not something that we're comfortable with. But yet we see Yehovah is dealing with these subjects because of the importance of how valuable it is that we understand that what God assigns capital punishment to, in my opinion, is a lot less than what we allow to go on every day in America. And so that's why we have so much crime. That's why we have so much prisons, and every one of the prisons are filled up. Because we keep thinking, let's be more sensitive, let's be more understanding, let's be more tolerable, and it's going to fix it. That won't fix it. It never fixes it. Then it goes on to chapter 20, verse 10, it talks about punishment for sexual immorality. Now, we had this in previous chapters. This is just pretty much a run over. It runs through it pretty quick, and it's kind of in-your-face kind of stuff. And a man who commits adultery with the wife of another man who commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, the adulterer and adulteress shall certainly be put to death. Capital punishment. Not less be understanding it was a mistake. In God's view, capital punishment. Think about that. Now we have to ask ourselves, what if we use this rule today? Would that continue? Would that sin keep growing, or would it diminish? God said the way you keep this diminished is you have to be strict on the rule. Now, again, he's very clear on this capital punishment for death as an adulterer, because he says a man who commits adultery with the wife of another man, he's married, she's married, who commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, the adulterer and adulteress shall certainly be put to death. And a man who lies with the wife of his father has uncovered the nakedness of his father. And again, that's not doesn't mean his mother. This is speaking of a concubine or a stepmom. A concubine or a stepmom. And so we see that these things were done by some of the sons of Yaakov. Both of them shall certainly be put to death. Their blood is upon them. Let me see that. A man who lies with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall certainly be put to death. They have made confusion, their blood is upon them. A man who lies with a male, as he lies with a woman, both of them have done an abomination, they shall certainly be put to death, their blood is upon them. A man who lies with another man is an abomination to God. Because people say, well, you know, that homosexuality is not spoke of in the Bible. It's clearly spoke of. Clearly. God considers that an abomination. This is not normal. It's not normal practice. But we have this whole transgender woke community. If you don't feel like being a boy today, just call yourself a girl, and there you go. And you think it's going to stop there? You can decide to be whatever you want. I seen one guy, he was making a meme, he said, he called up the federal government, he says, he's 20-something years old, he called the federal government up, he said, I identify as a 65-year-old, I want my Social Security right now. Of course, they didn't give it to him, they told him he was crazy. He said, there you go. What you think about all this other stuff? They're crazy too. He said, I'm 65 years old, I want my retirement right now. They didn't give it to him because they said he was crazy. I thought it was pretty hilarious, right? So here you go. Here you have There was just, let me tell you what's happening in the colleges. So there was just today, there was a college somewhere in the United States, I don't remember exactly where it was, but a college had a fraternity of sisters, right? How many know what that is, a fraternity of sisters? I mean, it's all girls. And a 6'2" male, they just had to put him in their fraternity because he identified as a woman, and they had to call the cops on him 3 or 4 times because now he's peeking in their doors. Can you imagine? And your kid in a fraternity of all sisters, and they got a 6'2" dude peeking in their doors at night because he identifies as a woman? And they had to let him in, because that's what happens once you soften up the rule and you start doing it. And so now they're trying to put legislation where they can change this. Now, common sense is wrong when you start it. Now you got to have legislation to tell you that it's wrong, which can take years to do. And it's constantly happening. But this is starting to get completely out of hand when you can start identifying as being something that you're not. You're just not. And this is the stuff that he's talking about. We can't have this happen. Both of them have done an abomination that shall certainly be put to death. Their blood is upon them. And a man who marries a woman and her mother, it is wickedness. They'll burn with fire. Notice that. He's telling you exactly what the capital punishment is. Burn with fire. Both he and they, that there be no wickedness in your midst. And a man who has intercourse with a beast, he shall certainly be put to death, and the beast you kill. And a woman who approaches any beast to mate with it, you shall kill the woman and the beast. They shall certainly be put to death. Their blood is upon them. And a man who takes his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, and sees her nakedness, and she sees his nakedness, it is loving commitment. Is it loving commitment? And they shall be cut off before the eyes of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness. He bears his crookednesses. A man who lies with a woman during her sickness and uncovers her nakedness, he has laid bare her flow. She has uncovered the flow of her blood. Both of them shall be cut off in the midst of their people. Do not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister nor your father's sister, for that is laying bare one's own flesh. They bear their crookednesses. And a man who lies with his uncle's wife, he has uncovered his uncle's nakedness. They bear their sin. They die childless. And a man who takes his brother's wife, it is uncleanness. He has uncovered his brother's nakedness. They are childless. So that's covered. That's about all that covers the sexual immorality. So everything I said there, God says this is immoral. If he says it's immoral, what should we say? It's immoral. It's immoral. You don't participate. You don't get involved in it. When you have a woman who actively, her choice for sexual activity is another woman, God says that's immoral. When you have a man who's actively, sexual activities with another man, he said that's immoral. So what should be your choice? It's immoral. You don't get involved. You don't participate. You don't condone. You don't do anything. You separate yourself from that. Why? Because it leads to tragedy, always. Always leads to tragedy. Never good. Now, that don't mean you can't be a witness to people. But there's a big difference. I covered this in previous Torah portions. There's one thing to put your arm on the shoulder of a harlot to be a witness to her. There's another thing to put your arms around her. And so he's not saying you can't be a witness. You can be a witness, but you can't be a witness and a participant. Because your witnesses just went out the window when you do that. You have to stand against what's immoral. And so he gives these immoral things. Then he goes on to verse 22, talking about how we have to make sure that we're set apart. And you shall guard all my laws and all my right rulings and do them, so that the land where I am bringing you to dwell does not vomit you out. He's bringing them to this land. Now, there's some 40 years before they get there, he's giving them all these rules. So they can start practicing amongst themselves, and they got a long time before they get there, but they're not to soon forget this. And it's funny thing about this, many of the people that's hearing these laws, they don't really listen too careful, because many of them, with the exception of very few, never make it in the land. They never make it in the land. They all die off. Do not walk in the laws of the nations which I am driving out before you, for they do all these, and therefore I loathe them. But I say to you, you are going to possess their land, and I myself give it to you to possess it. A land flowing with milk and honey. I am Yehovah Elohim, who has separated you from the people. And you shall make a distinction between clean beasts and unclean, between unclean birds and clean. And do not make for yourself abominable by beast or by bird or whatever creeps on the ground, which I have separated from you as unclean. And you shall be set apart to me, for I am Yehovah, for I, Yehovah, am set apart and have separated you from the people to be mine. And a man or a woman in whom there is a medium or who are spiritists shall certainly be put to death. They are to be stoned with stones. Their blood is upon them. So right before he closes chapter 20, he emphasizes this medium and spiritist that operates in that. They shall be stoned and put to death. He emphasizes it again. There's got to be reason behind that, because he knows this is going to be a real strong thing, because what happens is during Moloch worship, they would go in and worship. Remember, this was a practice. So this, can you imagine this whole town, this Canaanite town, would go to worship Moloch. And the children of Israel are now there. And they see all this act of worship. Before you know it, you get interested. Well, it's just this. It's what's going to hurt? It's innocent. It's just this. It's not going to be bad. It sucks you in for the entertainment. And before you know it, you start liking it. He said, don't give your children over to Moloch. Don't do it. And the only way we can stop that from happening is we have to keep ourselves sound in the Word of God. Day in and day out, we have to be constantly in the Word of God. If not, we're going to find ourselves getting in a lot of trouble. And so for those of you that think, well, I got it pretty figured out. I'm good. I should be okay. You know, I'm reading the Torah. I'm reading the Scripture. I want you to go to 1 Kings. Go to 1 Kings chapter 11. We talk about the wisest man in the world, what he did. So we think we think we have arrived, or we went to a couple feast days, and you know, we put tzitzits on and growed out a beard and we eat clean food. We good. Never think that highly of yourself. Always say to God, Lord, I can learn. I want to learn more about what you have for me. And don't look to other people and what they're doing. You look at you. You're going to be so busy, you won't have time to look at nobody else. This is the wisest man that ever lived. Let me show you what happened to him. In 1 Kings chapter 11, verse number 1, and Sovereign Shlomo loved many foreign women in addition to the daughters of Pharaoh, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zionians, and Hittite women. And from the nations of whom Jehovah had said to the children of Israel, you do not go unto them, and they do not go unto you. For they shall certainly turn away your heart after their mighty ones. Shlomo clung to these in love. And so what happened, Shlomo had many wives. And I think in total it was like 1,000 with 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1,000 women in his life. And they turned the heart of Salomo to their mighty ones. It wasn't long that one would come in and she was beautiful, you know. He would say, man, she's one of my favorite. And she'd say, you know, Salomo, you're building all this stuff in Israel. Why don't you build me something? I want something. Well, he built her an altar, a high place. Just out of the city of Jerusalem on the hill there, he built high places to Moloch. This is what Salomo did. Because he got turned, his heart got turned, because he thought, I got this figured out, I can handle it. The moment he started acquiring all this stuff, he needed more and more. It was never enough. The moment he went from one wife to a second wife, it was going to be a third, it was going to be a fourth, it was going to be a fifth, it was going to be a sixth. It wasn't going to be enough because he never could satisfy the flesh. You can't satisfy the flesh. That's why we have to walk in the Spirit. We have to walk this thing out and realize that the evil inclination is always with you. But is it in charge? Under the blood of Yeshua, your evil inclination should not be in charge. But you, nonetheless, you have it. That's why it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. This, the sin nature, the evil inclination that we have, is there, and it wants to dominate. It wants to strong arm you. But because of what Christ paid for, we can have the inclination of what's good is there for us also. And if we'll give ourselves over to what's good, and we continue to do that, we're going to have power over the inclination of that's evil. You will have power. You can have success serving God. You can be overcomers of the wrong that's out there. And everybody can. Every person that's ever lived can. But it's a choice you have to make. And so let's read on about Salomo. He clung to these in love. His love. He couldn't get it. It was just he loved them so much, he was going to do whatever they wanted. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. His wives turned away his heart. And it came to be that when Salomo was old, that his wives turned away his heart after all the mighty ones, and his heart was not perfect with Jehovah. His heart was not perfect with Jehovah. And his Elohim, and he was of Elohim, as was the heart of his father David. When he got old, his heart wasn't perfect toward Jehovah. Now we know David made some mistakes in his life, but he corrected those mistakes. But here we see Solomon, it's got some real issues happening here. And Salomo went after the Ashtaroth, the mighty one of the Zonians, and after Milcom, the abominations of the Ammonites. Thus Salomo did evil in the eyes of Jehovah and did not follow Jehovah completely like his father David. Now we see God comparing him on a scale between his father David, who was not a perfect man, who had some mistakes, some serious mistakes in his life. Yet he's comparing him to his father David, who got his heart right with God because he learned how to do what? He learned how to go back to what was right and repent. He had teshuva before Jehovah. He repented thoroughly of all he did. Matter of fact, David got to the point, he says, I don't care if I'm king or not. I'd rather be forgiven than being to be king. I'll give up my kingship. I want to serve Jehovah. He laid all of his crown and his robe off. He took it off. And he laid before God. And he laid before him for 7 days. And he cried out to God, Lord, I need you. God heard his cry. You read Psalms 51. That was the prayer that David prayed. Powerful. But he said, you're not like your father David. He was comparing him to him. Then Salomo built a high place of Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Moloch, the abomination of the children of Ammon. He built a high place of Moloch. Now, how many know that Solomon was well-versed in what I just read to you out of Leviticus? He was well-versed in this. This was not strange to him. He was a wise man. Nobody could study like him. Nobody could remember like him. I mean, when he opened his mouth, he poured out wisdom. So he was a good teacher. He was a good studier. He understood how to talk to people. He said, I want you to teach me how to go out and how to come in. He understood all these things, but his heart got turned because he wouldn't listen to what Jehovah said. It don't matter how high you think you are in this. You can always be turned if you're not careful. We have to always humble ourselves before Yehovah and say, God, I need you every day. Every day of my life, I need him. I need him to help me and to direct me. If not, you can be turned. And he's telling you, I don't want that to happen for you. So this is what we see happen in the life of Salomo. And so he did for all his foreign wives who burn incense and slaughtered to their mighty ones. Therefore, Yehovah was enraged with Salomo because his heart was turned away from Yehovah Elohim of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. And he had commanded him concerning this word not to go after other mighty ones, but he did not guard what Yehovah had commanded him. And Yehovah said to Salomo, because you have not done this and have not guarded my covenant, my laws, which I have commanded you, I shall certainly tear the rein away from you and give it to your servant. So you think about Solomon, all the wisdom he had, all the money, and the magnificent tabernacle that he built for Yehovah. We went through all those numbers. Remember that? How it was unbelievable. There was nothing that had ever been built so magnificent. And end up in a position he's in because he wouldn't listen to Yehovah. He wouldn't listen. He did the things, and it wasn't day one that he was acting that way. He went in on a normal day, but then it wasn't enough. His flesh wasn't enough, so he took another wife. And then once he started the snowball going, it was no stopping it. He could have any woman he wanted. And the way he did, the reason they had so many wives, because this is how you create, that's how you made allegiances. Your allies came through women. You would take, there would be a country that was not, maybe the Hittites, you know, they were being driven out the land. So they were getting smaller and smaller in number. So the Hittite, they'd find their most beautiful prized virgin, this Hittite woman, gorgeous. And they'd bring her and say, Solomon, we give her to you. She's yours. And they would create an alliance through the woman. And so now the Hittites, because they had an alliance through the gift they gave, so if the enemy came against the Hittites, Solomon would help them. There's another nation that creates alliances called the United States of America. We create alliances, and it's at the expense of people. We create all these alliances. We create an alliance with Ukraine. And so because we created an alliance with Ukraine, when Russia invaded Ukraine, we felt the need not to send troops, because that would have been a total disaster, but to send money to a tune of $170 billion worth of money, weapons, and everything. And it had one American I seen today, another American, he's number 10, that died in Ukraine, just sending people to go train. So we still have Americans dying in this war, a senseless war. But we create alliances. We have no choice. We took the virgin and we brought her in, and now we're on the hook for this alliance. We have alliances with Taiwan, in which China wants Taiwan, because Taiwan was part of their country. And Taiwan, during that whole communist regime in China, Taiwan moved across the little stretch of sea there, and that island of Taiwan, which is part of China, they became an independent nation. And China says, we want our land back. We're all together. You're Chinese. Taiwan's a Chinese. We want to be all together. We're going to go under one umbrella. We don't want to, but we're going to take it. And we got an alliance with Taiwan. We moved all of our important chip making that runs everything you own, runs your microwaves, runs your automobile, runs your cell phones, runs everything that you have, runs your washing machine, your refrigerator. Every one of those chip components, everything in your house is run by these components. They're all made in Taiwan. So we have to protect our interests. We took the virgin. Now we got to protect our interests. So we don't, they said we got to do this, we're going to do it. Well, when you do that, it won't take long before you know it. We got some serious trouble. So we're no different than what has happened, what we see in Solomon's story. You can be wise. That's not a qualifier. Being wise is not a qualifier for you not to make a mistake. You can make mistakes, but you got to stop making mistakes. When you repent, you stop making mistakes. He told a woman, where's your accuser? She said, I don't have none. I said, I don't accuse you either. Go and sin no more. Don't keep doing what you're doing. Don't get back in bed with those who were standing with stones in their hand right here, because you're going to be right back here again. You got to quit doing it. But Salomo didn't keep the laws, didn't keep the commands, and he wound up in a bad spot. And so when we look at his life, it's terrible. And Yehovah said to Salomo, because you have done this and have not guarded my covenants, my laws, which I have commanded you, I shall certainly tear the rain away from you and give it to your servants. And you can go on and read the rest of the story, because it's very powerful how you can have everything and throw it all away because of the flesh. And that's what Salomo was suffering from. He couldn't get his appetite. Once he got up that high, he couldn't satisfy it. That's what happens when most people get on drugs. They start out with just a little bit. Well, I'm just going to smoke a little weed. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to smoke a little weed. And then before you know it, you're doing a line. And it'll take long. Before you know it, you're putting the needle in your arm. You can look at everybody's stories all the same, because it just starts out small. You know, the alcoholic, he started out, I'm just going to drink a little bit. That's all I'm going to do. But he had no power over it. And so he drank a little more, and a little before you know it, he couldn't handle it no more. He was full-blown alcoholic, because his whole life was built around that. That's all it is. Because that's the only thing that could bring satisfaction. When there's something, I don't care what it is. It could be your work. It could be whatever. The moment something else outside of Yehovah brings comfort to you, you're well on your way to walking in these sins that he's talked about. But when you say there's nothing satisfying me more than Yehovah, than my relationship with him that was sealed by the blood of Yeshua, that was given, we got the payment made in full by the set apart spirit to give us the comfort that we have through what he's done for us and empower us to do it. The moment is something else. It's just a matter of time. It's going to snowball eventually on you. Before you know it, you'll give yourself over to it. So we have to stay true to what he's called us to. We have to make sure that we're doing what he's asked us to do, because we see these examples in the scripture how when we look at a guy like Salomo, who would have ever thought? Now, some scholars say, in the end, if you read, I guess it'd be better if I just read it so I don't leave you having some bad thoughts about Salomo. So in the end of his life, he wrote a book called Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes, he starts talking about how all of it was vanity. He said it was all vanity, all of it. He said, I wasted all of that. It amounted to nothing. So you can take some time and go read it. Go read Ecclesiastes 1. He said it was for nothing. Why did I do this? Scholars, some say that was his last final plea. Hopefully, Yehovah looked at him with mercy. We don't know. We're not told anywhere that he did. We're not told that he didn't either. But can you imagine these words? He said, it's all for nothing. I had all I wanted. I had everything I wanted. And look what I followed my flesh instead of following the spirit of Yehovah. Look where it led me, to nothing. Now, what good would it be for us to go through all the motions and go through all the change that Yehovah's taken us through? And in the end, we say vanity is just vanity, is nothing. What good would it be? That's why it's every day with Him. You have to humble your heart before Him. You have to ask Him, Lord, I need Your strength. I need you to come in and strengthen me. Every single day you do that, and you're going to find out you're going to have an ongoing, solid relationship with Yehovah, and that's key to making God smile upon us. We want to have that, and the only way to maintain that is we have to recognize what Yeshua did. That's how you think Yeshua was so successful. He didn't let His fame get to Him. He became famous. There were thousands of people following Yeshua. And then until He got down to the brass tacks, and many of them quit following Him at the end. But there were thousands following Him for fish and loaves and miracles. Man, they were all on board. But He could have let that get to Him, and He didn't. He knew what was keeping Him. He would always humble Himself and pray. And that should be something we do. So take some time and look at that. The words of the son of Dawid, the sovereign of Jerusalem. Fertility, fertility, says Kohelet. Fertility, fertility. All is futile. All is vanity, he said. All is vanity. Because he knew. He had 1,000 women. And he still couldn't be satisfied. He compromised his standards after making Yehovah this magnificent palace, this tabernacle, this temple. Then he made a god, he made idols to Moloch, to Ashtaroth, to Astarte. And you look at all these things, they all link together, and they all have these connections that we have to be careful that we're not allowing those type of practices to be something that we're participating in. Easter, Ishtar, Astarte, all these are all linked together. And so God says, don't participate in that. Do what I just, how is it we just can't take His word, read it, and just do what He says? How is that? Why is that a problem? And the issue is when you have most of the church word that says that's a problem. Why are we doing that? Why are we going to read the word for word? Why are we going to do what it says? That's over with. That's done away with. And Yeshua, we're free to do whatever we want. Well, you can be free to do whatever you want, but you're going to bear the consequences. And don't forget, He's telling us what the consequences are. And sure enough, here we are in the United States of America, we're bearing the consequences of it today. And how far is this going to go? I have no idea. I don't know about the time. But I do know this. God's telling us, you can't live that life and start be tolerable for everything goes now. It don't matter. I mean, I was looking at a quote today when Bush Jr., after the 9/11 events, and they were going through all this terrible thing, he went into a Muslim mosque, and he said, Allah's the same as God, God's the same as Allah, we're all the same, we all serve one God. And I watched this quote, because you can go and pull these memes up that showed when him saying this, and you think about how there was no outrage from the church community concerning that. You can't compromise. We have to stand upon what God said. And the moment you compromise, and we're no better off today with terrorism than we were then. As a matter of fact, we're way worse. To the tunes of millions and millions and millions of dollars and a lot of lives lost. For what? Absolutely nothing. We didn't accomplish a single thing. We went in Iraq, we basically bombed the entire town down. Then we spent money to build it back up. And we went to Kuwait, we did the same thing there. And then we went to the country right next to it, Afghanistan. We did the same thing, we bombed it to pieces, and then we spent the money to build it all back up. And now they're just as strong in terrorism as they were before we did all that. What was the point? You got to go back. You can't fix things because it's in your mind. You got to go back to the Word of God. You're never going to fix things because you get a million men march. You're not going to get people to go to Washington and stand up and carry signs. That's not how you fix things. You fix things by each individual person, one at a time, starting to do what God asked them to do individually. That's the power. That's where the source of power is. Not in numbers. When you and I, we do what God said to do, regardless of what is happening around us. And we humble ourselves before Him, we're going to see results, and we see big results. Amen? Well, I appreciate your time tonight. Thank God for you. We got a good Torah portion coming up. It's a long one, but it's good. So the Torah portion coming up for this Shabbat is going to be real good. So I encourage you to get yourself prepared for that. And I want to say I appreciate everyone for being here tonight. Anybody have any special prayer requests?